Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we call it around here, real debate without the hate. Hi there, I'm DJ from Virginia, a conservative libertarian.
I'm Greg from Cincinnati, Ohio. I'll be your liberal Democrat tonight.
Hi, I'm Emily Brewer. I'm a moderate Republican from Virginia, and I'm sponsored by white wine this evening.
and apparently not afraid to share your last name. And I'm Kevin Kelton, a moderate Democrat from California.
With over 70,000 downloads and averaging upward of 6,000 listeners a show, A More Perfect Union is one of the fastest growing political podcasts on iTunes, and we thank you so very much for that. We can now also be heard and found on iHeartRadio, and you can find our website with blogs and commentary at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. And we have a special guest this evening, Gary Kroger, an advertising executive and a candidate for the Iowa House of Representatives in Cedar Falls. He is the Democratic nominee for district number, what district number is it again, Gary?
60.
So, Gary, if you just do a quick introduction as to who you are and what led you to put your name on the ballot this year.
Well, I was born in a log cabin and walked over 25. Oh, a quick introduction. I was born and raised here in Iowa, but as Kevin knows, I sought fame and fortune in Hollywood, New York for most of my adult life. I moved back to Iowa 13 years ago because fame and fortune didn't prove to be what I thought they'd be, I guess. I became a father. I was married at the time. I became a father. And I sought more crucial values. By that, I mean respect for civil rights, respect for the environment, respect for the infrastructure, education, commerce, clean air, clean water, et cetera, et cetera. And Iowa, believe it or not, has always embraced those things. So I came back here to just earn a living. And I found myself in advertising. I had another son. And in the last 13 years, I've watched a lot of those values become marginalized. We were a leader in the nation in education, and now we're in the middle, if we're even in the middle. Our infrastructure has been decaying. We have allowed our water to become dangerously poor. And I just felt that I still have enough energy and the synapses are still firing well enough that I can become involved and try to make a difference.
I should point out, we're going to talk a little bit about Gary's halcyon days in show business toward the end of the interview. but Gary writes a fantastic blog called Gary Has Issues that I found through our Facebook friendship. And he has a tremendous following there, very passionate, progressive Democrat. And Gary, this is your first foray into politics, but not your first choice for the office to seek. Is that correct?
Well, I've been running for office for 18 months.
Oh, okay.
That's probably the longest campaign. Yeah, yeah, honestly. We had just resolved the Civil War conflict when I started this. I entered the congressional race from District 1 that would go to Washington a year and a half ago. Monica Vernon was in the race. Pat Murphy was in the race. And I just wasn't getting the traction. I wasn't getting the traction. As a neophyte in politics, I wasn't attracting the donors. I wasn't getting the earned media. And so a year ago, I just didn't see the path to victory. But I was getting attention, and I was really, people were really responding to my common sense ideas. And you can't make a living in politics on the state level. So I've been in a race now for several months against a firmly entrenched incumbent who's the Republican in this race. But I offer something very different for the state of Iowa from what he represents. So it's going to be a lively race. The district is it's split, a third Democrat, a third Republican, slightly more Republican, and a third no party. So that really is the target where my race lies. And that's a very interesting demographic right now. No party people aren't necessarily the people that are the more contemplative. They're often the angriest, the most disenfranchised. There's a lot of Bernie people, there's a lot of Trump people, and there's a lot of people every which way in the middle. But they are listening, and they're listening to real ideas.
So none of us are from Iowa. What are the issues in your campaign that, first of all, you're very passionate about and that you think are most important to your voters?
Well, I keep coming back to education because education is crucial. It was our greatest export and our greatest pride in my entire life was the fact that we were 1, 2, and 3 in the nation by every measure of education, test scores, ratios of classroom sizes, but all of the things that nurture an excellent public school education. And we're not anymore. The state legislature has not been funding education commensurate to the cost of education going up. So we've been, class sizes have been getting bigger. We've been losing new teachers to other states that pay better. Programs have been cut, language programs, art programs, music programs. So there are a lot of people that are really unhappy about that. But we're also facing all sorts
I'm going to interrupt for a second. You wrote a blog post maybe a week or two ago about teachers in Iowa on your Gary Has Issues post, which I'll plug again, which was excellent about teachers. And if anyone's listening, which I'm hoping 6,000 to 10,000 people are, I'll plug us. It's excellent. And I did some research on you. You know, read it. It's everything that everyone should know about teachers. They're not getting paid enough. There's a cut. And it was really well done. And I don't think if you don't have anyone saying that to you, you should be. So that's my little love letter to you.
Actually, so, made my day. Well, you know,
and I also know your social security number, and I did my research.
You know what? Use it. I'm not. Go ahead and use it.
Go on. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. Thank you for that comment. But I grew up with a teacher. My mother was a career teacher, so I know that. You know, I feel seriously, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, that the United States of America has been marginalizing education. I think that we've been looking away from liberal arts, looking away from the disciplines of science and mathematics and even the arts, which create critical thinking. I think that we have been so focused on commoditizing education that we're losing the value of it. And I think that teachers, as a result, have become demonized in a way. I hear people saying, well, they only work, you know, they don't work 3 months out of the summer. Well, you know what? Yeah, they do. They have to take classes so that they can improve their curriculum. There's all sorts of things they have to do. You don't just work from bell to bell. You are grading classes. You're counseling students. You're involved in all the other activities in the school. It is a, you know, it is a noble and difficult profession. But that was just sort of my hallelujah. But that was sort of the premise of the article that I wrote in defense of teachers.
Amen.
So, Gary, I have some questions for you. So, Iowa is a really unique state. I've only visited once. But the people there, there's a lot of rural and very basic American value sensibilities. How do you feel like you're going to be able to be successful in your district, and how are you reaching those folks?
That's a great observation. Iowa is unique. We're very conservative by nature, but we also have a rich progressive history. You know, when it comes down to our Supreme Court striking down DOM before anybody else, maybe second in the nation, we have a long history of civil justice. We have a long history of, you know, keeping our nose out of other people's business. We were even one of the first to ratify the 19th Amendment, if you want to keep going way back. So there's a rich history of progressive ideas. Education is a progressive idea, and our history really promoted those values. Now, at the same time, we are conservative. You know, we don't like to move. I don't want to pretend like I understand. You know, I don't want to paint conservative into slow-moving status quo, you know, hicks. That's not what conservatism is. But it's a very careful observance to make sure that we're not moving too fast.
Speaking of careful observance, I couldn't happen to notice that according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, you guys are actually spending on the health side about $1,000 per pupil above the state average, above the national average.
The national state average. Yeah.
So the question that I might have is when we're looking at, we're talking about education where you guys are closer to the mean, how much are you looking at going through what the state spends, what the state actually spends on education, what the state spends on health, what it spends on other matters, and making sure that the state is actually doing it in an efficient manner. Because the right. last thing you want to do is throw money at a problem and hope it goes away.
Absolutely. Very complex question and deserving of a deep analysis and conversation. In fact, we'll probably have to talk about this later. But, you know, we do work within a balanced budget here in the state of Iowa, and our economy is actually quite flush. Now, that being said, the cost of education, according to many measures, rises at 4.5%, maybe from last year to this year. Our state budget through 1.2% at it. So that discrepancy in there, okay, what is that going for? Is it going for salaries? Is it going for materials? Is it going to build schools? Well, according to the ISEA and other institutions monitoring exactly what you're concerned about, we are having to cut programs. We're having to cut teachers. So it doesn't seem to be a commensurate amount of money going right now toward education. But the frustrating thing is we do have the money to fund watershed development. We have the money to fund education fully, commensurate to the some agreed upon measures of what education requires.
If you guys don't mind, we're only on a limited time with Gary today. Before we lose our satellite feed,
understood.
He's not really on a satellite feed, but I've always wanted to say that.
What is this, like Patriot Games?
I did want to ask you about some national political stuff, Gary. I do know that you were a Bernie Sanders fan.
Yes, I was.
And I know that because you and I clashed on it a little bit. Can you tell us, like, where you are now and also where you see, you know, the hardcore Bernie people in your community, what you think is happening in terms of either coming, you know, back into the Democratic fold or going with different candidates?
Well, for the most part, they're coming back into the Democratic fold. But I know people who are very unhappy and very disappointed and some that are going with different candidates. But I would say the lion's share will vote for Hillary Clinton.
Again, back to what we've been trying to get to. We've given you a platform now to talk about Iowa politics for 20 minutes.
Yeah, so just...
Be fans and talk about Gary's days at SNL. I just want to let the audience know that the reason that Gary and I are on the show together here is that we were both at SNL at the same time. I was a writer for a couple of years. Gary, you were a cast member for
Three years. He played my third favorite Minnesotan politician ever at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Walter Mondale, right?
Yes, yep. As a matter of fact.
Can you do a little Walter for us?
Oh, you know, it's not like I pull him out at cocktail parties. I haven't done Walter in a long time. But when you learn to do imitations, you find a hook phrase, right? And that's what you go back to before you go on. You just say it over and over. Now, my Walter Mondale is very good. But who really knows what a good Walter Mondale sounds like?
I was just about to say, of all our 6,000 listeners, about 1,000 of them are sitting on pins and needles right now going, I hope he does it.
This is for the 1,000 people right here. You ready?
Yep.
Mr. Reagan started an arms race on Earth, and now he wants to extend it to the heavens.
I love that.
Bravo! Bravo!
And they put makeup on Gary with a fake nose and a hairpiece, and he was Walter Mondale. It was great.
It was pretty good.
My favorite piece that we did, I'm gonna just do a little Gary bragging here because he's a humble guy. But you know, he obviously was hoping that Walter would win, so he would have able to do the impression for another couple of years. It didn't work out that way. So we had to come up with a piece. Or we didn't have to, but we wanted to come up with one last Walter Mondale piece. And we decided to write a piece where Walter Mondale, do you remember this, Gary, was pitching Schick razors.
Oh, yeah.
And the idea was, it was before Bob Dole had become a pitchman for Viagra, so we were really ahead of our time. And the line that I loved was Walter saying, Schick razors because no one wants to lose by a whisker.
No one wants to lose an election by a whisker.
I always loved that line. And then he broke character and said, what am I doing here?
What am I doing? Thanks a lot, Walter, Mr. 13 electoral votes.
But I do want to brag a little bit about Gary for people who may know him or may not be old enough to remember those years in SNL. Gary
What year was that, guys?
Thank you.
82 to
85. 82 to 85, that's right. And Gary was like the Willie Mays of players because he had the whole game. He could do everything. And while Gary is not an impressionist by trade, he had this, and probably still has this, amazing capacity to do a voice almost on demand. I remember one time, Gary, I don't know whether you remember this, someone wrote a piece with a Carl Sagan impression in it.
Yes.
And right
billions
before read-through...
and billions of stars in the universe. I just remember billions and billions.
but I saw the writer hand Gary the sketch like 2 minutes before read through on Wednesday, and Gary said, "Sagan, I don't know. Let me give it a shot." And it just came out like you cleared your throat and you were Carl Sagan. And I saw you do that with numerous different impressions, and you really were. And the writers loved writing for Gary. So
well, that was fun. My favorite was Alan Alda, and I still think I do the best Alan Alda. And again, I haven't done this probably in 30 years, but here goes. The blood on Klinger's apron is clashing with his paisley dress. Oh, I thought that's what landmines were for. But I digress.
OMG.
Now, while the three of you have been enjoying this trip down memory lane, I took a look at Iowa District 60, and it looks to be a fairly urban and suburban district. Am I correct in that? Okay.
But there's a strong rural presence. But again, to the point that was made earlier, there's a rural urban presence. Period. Yeah. But yeah, there's a strip of white collar, but also very blue collar, very rural as you go to Hudson, very professional on this side of town, and over here, it's very diverse in that respect.
Well then, are you willing to maybe go beyond the rather bizarre ethanol mandates and subsidies that drive up the price of corn for farmers who use corn and drive up the price of corn and everything else in the foodstuff department for those of us who are not farmers but who are in fact consumers in urban and suburban areas, including, I would presume, the large majority of your constituents? Are you willing to take on big corn?
Yes. Now, that is a death knell here too, because of the revenue. It's the politically expedient topic that everyone embraces because they have to. I'll be hung for having said that.
I appreciate your willingness to grab hold of what is the third rail of Iowa politics. Kudos to you, sir.
You know what? I shouldn't talk about gun control in Iowa either. That's another rail. There's subjects that are very dicey to talk about, but I do talk about them because it's what I believe. Look, as I say to anybody, you can disagree with me. I think I don't choose these positions because I drew them from a hat and I didn't inherit them. This is how I feel. But let's have the conversation.
If you can manage to engender a more reasonable conversation about ethanol and big corn in Iowa, kudos to you, sir. I have already drunk to your candidacy.
Well, good. I got a guy for you to look into, Tom Feagan. He ran for the Senate, lost to Patty Judge. But look into Tom. Tom and I talk about exactly what you're talking about, and you will like what you read from Tom. Tom Feagan, F-I-E-G-A-N.
Okay, noted. By the way, don't let the compliment go to your head, Gary, because DJ has drunk to candidates in Nova Scotia. So, but with that, Gary,
hey, I was very fond of Premier John Hamm, just so that you know.
I loved him in Mad Men, by the way.
Yeah,
he was great.
Right. So you see, the theme is television actors who've gone into politics.
Exactly.
Well, Gary Kroger, we want to thank you for giving us your time today, and good luck in that race in the 60th, not congressional, the 60th House
State
District?
House District 60.
House District 60 in Cedar Falls, Iowa, is part of that. And we'll be looking on election night, you know, between the returns between Hillary and Trump and Johnson and Stein to see how you did. So best of luck with that.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Gary.
Bye.
So, guys, what'd you think? Would he have won your vote if he was running in your district?
I don't want to sound too much fanboy, but I think he's rather dreamy. He's got my vote.
I very much like him, actually.
If he was serious about big corn, I would have to be very, very thoughtful about where my vote would go.
Yeah, yeah. And he really is. Like I said, I've sort of, through Facebook, kind of tracked Gary's evolution from someone like us who loves politics into someone who's going the next step and actually putting his name on the ballot and taking that risk. He is very sincere. This is not a guy that's doing it for career advancement, for any type of grandeur. He really just wants to do the right thing and hopefully make his community better. I know that sounds corny, but that's who he is. Let's segue now to national politics. I mean, this was a big foray into local politics, and it was great having a real politician on the show. But we can't do the show without talking about Mr. Trump and Mrs. Clinton. So, first of all, I think we all acknowledge that Trump had possibly one of the worst weeks that any presidential candidate in recent memories had. Quite frankly, I said to my friends, this to me harkens back to the last week or two of the Nixon administration in terms of seeing one person's, you know, people fleeing him left and right, both public support and actually political support. What do you think, DJ?
Honestly, the most painful thing about this was the fact, and I'm going to disagree with you, Kevin, is that those who left him were frankly so few. It was a total of two sitting congressmen who wised up and abandoned him. The last name was Hanna. Congressman Hanna out of New York switched over to Hillary Clinton. Scott Rigel, a retiring congressman from here in Virginia Beach, has endorsed Gary Johnson. But most of the rest of the Republicans looked at the dumpster fire and said, "Oh, let's keep our hands warm." You know, I don't understand it. He kept insisting that things happened that didn't. He blasted our allies, the Japanese, the day before the 71st anniversary of the Hiroshima bombing.
You know, the worst problem I have with all of this, though, with Trump is I look at this, and when he walked out of that convention, his responsibility load increased to the people that did and didn't support him. And his behavior is the worst that I've ever seen in my lifetime, which isn't very long. But it is some of the worst behavior I've ever seen out of a presidential candidate. And he thinks he's running a business. He thinks he's on The Apprentice. It still has not hit him yet that he's the Republican nominee for president. And what needs to happen is someone needs to lock him in a room, give him a couple million dollars in cash to count, and put a gag on him.
Which is not going to happen because that's not the way he operates. Look, I grew up in New Jersey. Kevin grew up in Nassau County. Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong. This is to us. This is just Trump being Trump. This is who he is. This is what he does, folks.
Yeah, it's not a question. Yeah, I agree with you, and to a mild extent, don't quite agree with you, Emily, in that I don't think he thinks this is a TV show, a reality show. I hear the people on the news say that a lot. I tend to agree more with what DJ's saying. This is just who the man is. This is probably how he got laid when he was a single man. This is how he made his first deals.
He
reverts to the mean every day. And people who say it's time for him to evolve, it's time for him to pivot to God knows what, it's just not real. He is who he is. He only listens to three people in the world, and they're his adult children. And that's a very bad sign for a presidential candidate, but that's who he is.
And even worse, before those children were old enough to advise him, the person he listened to more than anyone else, and maybe Kevin will be the only one who remembers his name, was Roy Cohn.
Oh, sure.
And if Roy Cohn is the chief advisor, it explains everything that he has done, and it explains why he will never change, because this is standard Roy Cohn 1940s and 1950s playbook.
And just for our listeners who may not know the name, Roy Cohn was famously the attorney for the House Un-American Activities Committee when Joe McCarthy was leading the witch hunts against communists throughout the government and in Hollywood. Then he became a mobster attorney, and he was known for not playing nice with others. Is that an understatement, or is that an understatement?
No, that's well euphemistically said, Kevin.
Yeah.
And there is, in fact, if you follow British media, which I do because I'm weird, there are actually, I think it was in the Daily Mail, it's an excerpt from a new book coming out on Trump, which actually talks about how Trump Tower in New York was built. And in a lot of cases, it was due to friends in the mob who basically built this tower despite their unions striking against everybody else and various other things. But this is a guy who grew up in 20th century New York. This all makes perfect sense to him, and it's bewildering to everyone else.
Absolutely.
Right. Is there any chance in the world that Trump could say, you're right, I've had enough. I've had now maybe 2-3 weeks of just crappiness. I'm stepping down, and you guys pick whoever you want. Do you guys see that as a possibility?
No.
Not really. The only – and I think I wrote an article on this, or maybe I just said it to myself in the closet. The only way I could conceivably see this happen – which, by the way, is the same thing.
Same thing.
The only way that could conceivably happen is this. If the powers that be in the Republican Party, let's say Mitch McConnell and maybe a Paul Ryan, or maybe just some power players that aren't elected officials – went to him and said, look, Donald, you're ruining the brand for us, so this is our proposal. You step down, make up anything you want to say, you resign your post, we'll put in either Pence or we'll nominate somebody else, or we're going to run Mitt Romney, or come up with another name, but it'll be a big name, on as many state ballots as we can get on. We know he's not going to win, but we guarantee you, you won't either, and you may come in third or fourth. And if you want that on your resume, Donald, be our guest. But if you don't want to be humiliated like no other major party candidate has ever been humiliated, you better think about stepping aside now. Now, I don't think this is going to happen. I'm saying that's the only way I could see it happening.
That would imply that the folks who make up the, quote, establishment, unquote, of the Republican Party actually have spines.
No, they don't.
I've known these people for 25 years. They don't.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as many of them are concerned,
this dumpster fire is actually preferable to what really scared them, which was Ted Cruz being nominated.
Well, listen,
that's the reality.
And the other point is, we're past the point of anyone else getting on the ballot, even if Trump stepped down in some states, like North Carolina.
But again, it's not to do it to win. It's to do it to preserve the Republican Party.
Right. But Trump is on North Carolina no matter what.
Yeah.
And so
it's too late for anybody to get on enough to win. There's no doubt about that.
But it's too late for anyone to start the organization up from scratch, just even to get enough balance to make a difference. The simple fact of the matter is, 14 million Republican voters, about 42-43% of the Republican electorate, chose this man. As, God help me, as Harley Quinn said in Suicide Squad, which is out in major theaters today, own that blank. The Republican Party has to own this. This is what their voters wanted, especially when you throw in the Carson and the Huckabee people as well. This is what they wanted. This is what they'll want in 2017 and 2018 and 2020. This is Donald Trump, as old as he is and as backwards as he is the Republican Party's future. Have fun with it, folks.
Okay, well, now, in all fairness, the Democratic Party, although Hillary Clinton is doing very well in the polls now, but they're not without their embarrassing moments as well. And I think it's only fair to point out that Hillary spent a week trying to weave herself out of a web of lies about lying. It's one of the more bizarre things that I could remember when she was interviewed last week on State of the Union on CNN and claimed that James Comey had said she told the truth when she meant he had he said she told the truth to the FBI in their internal interview with her for their internal investigation, but he differed with her on some facts that she told the public, and she's been catching a lot of heat now in the media for a misunderstanding that I understand, but nobody else is giving her a pass on it. Greg, what do you think? Is this a tempest in a teapot, or did she really screw up?
So every time I see an article about this, and I've read, I'd like to say 40, but it's probably closer to 80. I have to read the verbiage like 15 times because it reads like a C.S. Lewis. It's very difficult. So yes, perhaps if I went to another 4 years of law school, I would understand this. One. Two, if I read it from a conservative site, she lied. If I read it from a liberal site, it makes sense. The thing is, I don't think anyone's ever going to really understand that. And like Emily said last week, no one's going to remember and or care about this.
This is standard for Clinton when it's either an outright lie or a bizarre obfuscation that confuses the truth and the lie in a great big hodgepodge that takes a flour sifter to understand. And by the time everyone actually figures out what she actually said and what it meant, she's already moved on to something else. And she just has to keep this up for another 3 months because she is running against someone on the major party side who is basically doing the same thing, only he's not as good at it as she is, so that he keeps tripping all over himself.
So he doesn't like babies.
So this is, you know, that this is standard fare for the Clintons, and this is what we have to look forward to for at least the next 4 years, because again, I don't see her losing, and that's all I got to say on the matter.
Okay, well, again, in the interest of time, just to move on, there are other candidates running for president. One of them being Gary Johnson, the Libertarian. DJ, did you catch the town hall that he did this week? I believe that was also on CNN.
I was not able to catch the town hall. I was able to check some of the transcripts of it and gauge folks' reactions. I saw some of the first town hall back, I guess, a couple of months ago. And based on what I read, Johnson in particular did a lot better this time than he did last time, which is good. It makes me as a Johnson supporter... yes, that's right. Call me a jockstrap as often as you want. I walked right into that one. It makes me feel more confident in the Libertarian ticket if they actually do get into the debates. I'm not sure whether they will or not. And again, the question is going to be the question that the Libertarian Party has to sort out is, why are they here? Are they going to present themselves as a sort of permanent minor third party alternative? Or are they going to say, yeah, you know, okay, fine, America's good with a two-party system. We want to try to replace one of the big parties. I think there's some tension within the campaign as to which way they want to go. They're used to being the third-party alternative. They're not used to swinging for the fences, as it were, because, of course, this will take time. It's a longer plan if you're actually trying to replace one of the big parties. You have to think 5-10 years into the future. Whether they're willing to do that or not, I don't know. We'll see. But they have, whichever way they want to go, they have a unique opportunity to do it. They got a congressional endorsement in retiring Congressman Scott Rigel this weekend. There are rumors and whispers that other big-time Republicans are going to endorse them. I don't know whether that will actually happen. Those rumors have been in the wind for a while. But they really have a chance to make their case. What they have to do is figure out what case they want to make. But from what I read, I was pretty pleased with how things went this week.
Okay, and finally, let's just talk about the state of the race. Emily, we haven't thrown to you much today because I want to let our audience know that you're being quite the trooper tonight. You're playing injured because you threw your back out today doing a sporting event. But that said, we'd love to hear from you just your general impressions about the week that's passed and the weeks to come.
Well, obviously for Trump, I mean, nothing has gone right. It has been his terrible, good, bad, awful, horrible day. I mean, it's just been terrible. You know, I don't think he's listening to his handlers. I think it's only going to go down from here. I think the polling will get progressively worse. And after I saw his polling with African-American voters, I'm highly concerned. Not that I think he would be able to pull many, but the showing was pretty terrible.
I believe it was 1%.
It was 1%. Yeah. For Hillary, I think that she's just got to keep on pushing through. I think that she's tired. I think that she needs something to get re-energized, because I think I've seen a couple of her speeches on the road, and I think that the wear and tear of the road is you know, putting some miles on her, and I think she's really tired. So I think she's got to recharge her battery if she's going to be able to engage and just really excite voters.
Do you think that this the 10 days or the 2 weeks that the Olympics are going to be on, is this going to be kind of a quiet time where the cake, I mean, this is the cliche that they say every year, you know, is the current lead that Clinton has going to sort of get baked into the cake now? Or do you think there's going to be a lot of activity while the Olympics are grabbing the headlines?
So if you guys remember going back to the 1996 Olympics, it was in Atlanta, it was in the United States, and all presidential politics stopped. Do you guys remember that?
Not really, but I'll take your word for it.
Everything was focused on Atlanta, and that may be because it was in the United States. Right, and there was a lot of news going on around that, but I'd be very interested to see if the media cycle will mimic that.
Well, the simple fact of the matter is both major candidates would have a vested interest in that happening. One, because Trump needs to stop the bleeding, and because Clinton is in a position where she essentially wants to run out the clock. So both have an interest in sort of letting things quiet down for the Rio Olympics. Now, for the most part, I've seen this going as far back as 1988, when the Olympics came after the conventions, as they have now. And yeah, politics sort of took a holiday and sort of rested while the Olympics worked itself through. So it was easier in 1996, because memory serves, that was actually before the two conventions, if my memory serves, and it may not. But I do remember from 1988 that things relatively slowed down. And again, both major party candidates have a vested interest in slowing things down for their own different reasons. But I don't think the fundamentals really have not changed, which will lead me to what I think is the inevitable, which is Hillary Clinton gets above 40% but below 50%. Donald Trump goes below 40%, and I don't know his floor. And the real question is, how close can Gary Johnson get to Donald Trump? I don't think Johnson will pass Donald Trump, but the question is, how close can he get to him?
Well, Johnson needs 15% to get on the debate. I believe that's the number, right?
Well,
assuming we have the last debates.
It could very well be that Trump throws a hissy and there are no debates
because
at all.
He needs the debate. He needs the debates. If he was ahead, he might be able to pull that. But this is my take on it. Trump is a boxer, and we're talking about a 15-round match, and he's going into the 13th and 14th round, and his corner is telling him, you are down on points. You are not going to win this on a decision. You need a knockout. And that's what he's going for now. And he's going to be swinging like a wild man from now until November 8th. It's going to be ridiculously dirty, but he needs those debates. Now, I don't think he's going to win a debate against Hillary Clinton, but he's sure going to have to try.
Yeah, but the question is, if you're Hillary Clinton, all you have to do is say, you know, I know what the rules are, but the fact of the matter is we've bent these rules before, we blah, 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 blah. Why don't we let Gary Johnson in? And from that point, you've basically frozen everything in amber, and you don't have to have debates.
No, I disagree. I don't think she wants Johnson in.
I don't think she wants Stein in.
I think she wants him mano a mano.
She wants Thunderdome.
According to the interview that Trump did with the Washington Post this week, he wants her mano a mano. I think if there's debates, I think there's going to be debates. You know, maybe Johnson might get in on some technicality, or maybe he'll get into the second and third debate. Maybe they'll allow him into one of those debates. Hillary Clinton is not going to take a pass on the debates. She is not that kind of candidate that's going to go, I'm going to try to sit on this lead and I'm going to avoid a confrontation with Donald Trump. She wants to debate Donald Trump.
Yeah, every Bernie person would freak out.
Yeah, no.
If she did that. No, the first debate is literally going to be held in a cage on fire with like sharp implements everywhere. It is going to be one of the ugliest things in the world. I mean, with Tina Turner screaming at the top of her, she's going to moderate, I'm pretty sure.
And it will get 100 million viewers.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be great.
And Trump is going to say that it's all him.
Yeah, and it is.
It is.
No one's tuning in to watch Hillary Clinton debate. It's all Trump. But she's his Joe Frazier, and that's okay.
At the end of the thing, she's going to take his tie off his bloodied body and then, you know, nail it to the podium and be like, "This is mine!" And then she's just going to walk off. It's going to be pretty awesome.
It's fun to think about. But in the meantime, we have to take this week by week. DJ, you want to take us home with the plugs?
Oh, wait. I've got a prediction.
Oh, okay. Predictions.
Okay.
Trump is going to run over someone's dog. Probably a small child's dog.
He doesn't even drive.
I know. That's the worst part. He's gonna say, "Let me drive. I'm the hugest driver in the most elegant car. Hold on." And he's going to run over a small child's dog. It's going to be terrible. I mean,
oh,
I'm gonna,
Jesus.
It's going to be everything to do to stop from laughing.
Any other predictions that anyone wants to throw out? I have none. No,
I got nothing.
I don't have any. I think it'll be a rather quiet week. So don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And please share our link on your Facebook newsfeed so that your friends can find us too. And with that, that's another week of the More Perfect Union. Until next week, bye-bye.
Good night, guys.